Welcome to this podcast on creating safe spaces in the Our Voices 2 Youth Advocacy Project. The Our Voices 2 project is coordinated by the International Centre, researching child sexual exploitation, violence and trafficking at the University of Bedfordshire in the UK. As part of the Our Voices 2 project, the International Centre is working in partnership with three national NGOs in Europe. They are Different and Equal in Albania, the National Centre for Child Abuse Prevention in Moldova, and ATINA in Serbia. Each organisation is implementing participatory advocacy activities in their respective countries with young people affected by sexual violence. The Our Voices 2 Toolkit was written for adult facilitators from these three NGOs to help them support young people who are current and former service users to design and plan an advocacy campaign on sexual violence against children. The toolkit is divided into four sections. Section 1 looks at how to create a safe space in a group setting. Section 2 explores sexual violence. Section 3 focuses on children's rights and children's participation. And Section 4 is about participatory advocacy. In this podcast, I speak to Camille Warrington at the International Centre, who was involved in designing Section 1 of the toolkit, which focused on how to create a safe space in a group setting with the young people, or as they are referred to in this project, youth advocates. Camille will talk about why we think it's important to create safe spaces with youth advocates, what was covered in this section, and provide some feedback from the facilitators and youth advocates about how they found this part of the project. So hi, Camille. Thank you for joining us today.
Hello.
Firstly, can I ask you why you thought it was important to include a section on creating safe spaces in the toolkit?
I think obviously when working with any children and young people, whether it's from research or practice, we know that well-being and their best interests and their safety are paramount concerns. But we also know that these have particular significance if we're working with children and young people who've been subject to forms of abuse or oppression or experienced them. And there's a range of, I would say, very quite specific, but also very legitimate concerns about involving children and young people who have been affected by sexual violence or in communities affected by sexual violence, and involving them in participatory or rights-based work and particularly group-based work. And so some of those concerns relate to the risk of re-traumatization, the risk that maybe discussions or reflection activities may be triggering for a young person, and also the need to consider issues of stigma, which we know are really significant in all cultures and communities around young people or adults who've experienced sexual violence. And I guess for us, it's as simple as if the work can't be done safely, it shouldn't be done. But equally, on the kind of alongside that, we're a team who believe really strongly in the value of participatory working on this topic and its importance, and recognise the kind of interdependency of children's participation and their protection. So we want to develop a willingness and capacity for people to do this, to kind of further social justice, but we need to be able to do that safely. And we need to be able to model that safe practice and develop others' capacities to do it in ways which are safe and are supportive of participants' well-being. So for us, this section of the toolkit is really kind of almost a critical foundation before any of the other work took place. Mm. If we were asking our partners to do work, participatory work, which does involve an element of managing and holding risks, we were very conscious that we needed to support them and resource them to do so.
Great. Thanks, Camille. Yeah, these are really important points. And what do facilitators need to think about when setting up the group in preparation for this project?
I think this for us was obviously the question that framed this section of the toolkit. Like, so what do they need to do? And actually, when we sat down and started thinking about this, it was a bit of a challenge, because what we realized is there's no blueprint or tick list that will work in every scenario, in every project, in every different organization. to make sure facilitators are keeping young people safe. Because we know that every context, every group and every individual is different and will have different needs. And what's right for one young person or organisation might not be right for another. Sometimes young people need things that are seemingly contradictory. So for us, I think what we started off with was thinking about this in terms of principles. And that seemed like a really helpful starting point for facilitators, because we thought with a set of principles, it then is encouraging facilitators to reflect on and apply the learning rather than just following a list of instructions kind of by rote. Mm. And actually, reflective practice is itself one of the principles that we suggested that is at the heart of safe practice. So encouraging that seemed key. So it wasn't saying we're not going to tell you exactly what to do, but we are going to say these are core principles that you need to consider thoroughly and think about the implications of. And so they were things like the importance of collaborative planning. So we know that we can't eliminate risks, but most risks can be managed if they're anticipated and resources are identified and made available to respond or mitigate them. Similarly, shared decision making was a principle, something we know is at the kind of core of good safeguarding and good child protection, the importance of working in trauma-informed ways, ensuring everyone's working from a place in which they have an understanding of trauma and the ways it may manifest in individuals and in groups and how to respond to that. The importance of staff supervision and support and organisational support, because you may have really enthusiastic, brilliantly skilled facilitators, but if they're not being supported by their managers, then that has implications for safety and their well-being as well. And also the role of kind of partnerships and wider support networks. All these things are learning from our own work in the UK doing participatory research work, applied participatory research on sexual violence. And these are things that we can kind of say in every project, no matter how we're doing it and how different the groups of young people will be, in each one of them, these things are key. So I think that was our starting point, as it were, if that makes sense.
Great, thank you. That's really interesting. And could you tell us a bit more about what is covered in the toolkit?
So I suppose this kind of, yeah, this builds on the last question. So if our starting point was a set of principles, how could we make that a little bit more practical and tangible for facilitators and young people to prepare them to work together? So we've structured the toolkit in terms of the chronology of a project, and we thought, what are the different steps or different stages of a project? And again, we know that every project was different. What was going on, the advocacy project in Albania was likely to be very different to the one in Moldova. But despite those differences, we know that there's certain stages that all group-based working will go through. And that we know that in each of those stages, there are different set of questions and maybe some kind of example exercises that could be used. So what participants need to make them feel safe at the beginning of a project and when a group comes together, that might be different to what needs to be thought about to ensure participants are safe in later stages when the outputs of an advocacy project are being shared or disseminated publicly. So therefore we structured the toolkit around kind of six distinct broadly chronological stages, and they were set up, so planning a project, the engagement, the initial work to kind of approach young people and kind of say, do you want to be part of this? Starting a group, so the first time that young people who had been engaged were brought together. And then there's a section about the kind of the group maintenance, the ongoing needs of a group, some stuff around facilitation and techniques and exercises that can be used throughout. And then we've got a section which we called communicate or communication, which is about sharing project outputs with wider audiences. And again, that will take different forms. It might be the publication of a report, or it might be a film or a public event. But again, there's some kind of questions and ideas around safety at those stages. And then also closing, but probably the stage that gets thought about least, how we end projects and young people's involvement and think about any follow-up or goodbyes, and actually that's a really important stage to think about. So each section, that's how it's kind of structured, and as well as in each stage kind of trying to kind of remind people about some key principles, maximizing participants' choice and control, shared decision making, using reflective practice, we've also kind of given some quite what we hope and think are quite kind of practical examples of exercises. So in the stage of bringing a group together, we've got some kind of standard stuff about group agreements and maybe some more novel ideas about how do you explore the idea of confidentiality in a group. It's quite different to how we can promise confidentiality in a one-to-one interaction. Or we've got stuff on in the section about a group being maintained and going on about kind of grounding exercises. So if you're having quite intense discussions and reflection activities in a group, how do you end a session in a way that brings your people back into the present and kind of lessens the emotional intensity that they might be walking out of that space with? So some kind of practical ideas about that. And similarly in the communication section, things about exercises that help groups to manage the risks associated with representing themselves or their issues, and issues around how the group wants to describe themselves, and some kind of, and hopefully as much of this is integrated into games and active and interactive things. But we're also throughout suggesting that these are examples, and we're reminding facilitators that they need to recognize, you know, they're going to all be bringing their own knowledge and skills and bringing them to this, and they may have a whole wealth of ideas and exercises that they use that they can adapt or will suit themselves to one of those six stages. So it's a kind of mixture of some, like, here's an idea, here's a very practical tool on how to do it, and here's some things that you can think about and adapt for yourself.
Great, that's really helpful, thank you. And is there anything else about doing this type of work that you would like to emphasize, or any key messages for facilitators?
I think there's a couple of things. I suppose one thing that we have learned within the International Centre and our history of doing this for over a decade, this type of work, is that we recognise that this work is not risk-free, but that nothing is. And there are risks in not working in participatory ways and not involving young people in decision-making about those lives, about their lives. And so we need to kind of manage risk and think about managing risks rather than avoiding them, but also to recognize and acknowledge the benefits of working in this ways. And increasingly we're starting to evidence some of those benefits, things that we've previously been a kind of instinct or anecdotal. In a project like Our Voices, we've got an opportunity to kind of evidence and collect more systematically what they are. And I think there's something else about the importance of leadership, both in organisations and from funders, leaders who recognise the value of participation and are prepared to invest in it, and also support staff to manage the associated risks. That feels really, really paramount. And I think linked to that, we know that when leadership sees participatory practice as integral to what organisations do to keep young people safe, then it works most effectively. And that they, as leaders, communicate kind of a commitment and confidence to their staff about this work. And that feels really key in sustaining it. And I think that's just, I suppose that's the last point really to emphasise, although we have kind of touched on it, is that we really strongly believe at the International Centre in the interdependency of children's rights to protection and participation. And we know that's there in theory and it's there in the UN Convention. But this work that we're encouraging practitioners and researchers to engage in is about kind of seeing that in reality and in practice. What does that mean in practice? And we really are committed to not seeing participation as an add-on, a luxury right, but something that's core in terms of how organisations keep young people safe and create safe communities.
Mm, absolutely. And lastly, I'd be interested in hearing about some of the feedback on this section of the toolkit that you received from facilitators and from youth advocates.
Yeah, and for me, this is one of the most gratifying bits of the process, I suppose, because we've done this work in the UK, as I said, for quite a long time. But we've never, this is the first time we've really tried to kind of build capacity in others to do this work and also to do it in different cultural contexts and different organisational contexts. So it felt like a really exciting opportunity, but also one that we didn't know how it would be received and how transferable our expertise and learning is to those different contexts. And so I think one of the strongest messages that we've got back is absolutely like, yes, it is, and that they've found... we've had lots of really positive feedback about this section of the toolkit being just really helpful and working to create a sense of safety. There's quite a lot of feedback from youth advocates about the value of their work they did when they set up the group, developing group agreements and ground rules together, and the importance of that for feelings of safety and security. There's some stuff which again wouldn't surprise us, but about that stuff taking time, you know, that young people are nervous, they're taking a risk by being part of groups like this, and facilitators themselves recognize that and said, you know, actually the most difficult part was that getting to know you part, and that needs time, but that comfort with each other and trust can be developed. And there are ways of doing that. And from that trust and comfort and from that safety, that becomes a foundation that the work for the rest of the toolkit, the kind of advocacy projects, can be done. So actually, once you've got, there's a really nice quote, I don't know if I can find it now, but just that once you've got that space, then the work can take place and it makes it much easier for young people to talk. And so it's really nice when we hear things like youth advocates saying, actually, it felt like a non-judgmental space. I felt comfortable being in the group, and facilitators saying things like, you know, actually, if survivors are in an environment that's safe, then they can speak about this and work on this. So, yeah, that's been really nice for us. And I think it's given us the confidence, hopefully, to be able to share this learning more widely. And obviously, we're always keen for feedback and to learn from others as well.
That's really encouraging feedback. Thank you so much, Camille. It was really, really fascinating talking to you. For those of you listening who would like more information about the toolkit, we have developed a series of briefing papers which give an outline of the different sections of the toolkit, along with some examples of activities and references to useful materials and resources. And we are currently analysing the data from the Youth Advocacy Project, and all the learning will be shared over the coming months via the Our Voices website, which is www.our-voices.org.uk. Thanks again, Camille, and bye for now.